2. There I was the witness of a revolting scene. The poor woman was deceived to her face, and I could do nothing. Indeed, what could I say to her? I had had time to reconsider things a little, and reflect that I had nothing to go upon but certain feelings and suspicious presentiments. I found her in tears, almost in hysterics, with compresses of eau de cologne and a glass of water. Before her stood Pyotr Stepanovitch, who talked without stopping, and the prince, who held his tongue as though it had been under a lock. With tears and lamentations, she reproached Pyotr Stepanovitch for his desertion. I was struck at once by the fact that she ascribed the whole failure, the whole ignominy of the matinee, everything, in fact, to Pyotr Stepanovitch's absence. In him I observed an important change. He seemed a shade too anxious, almost serious. As a rule, he never seemed serious. He was always laughing, even when he was angry, and he was often angry. Oh, he was angry now. He was speaking coarsely, carelessly, with vexation and impatience. He said that he had been taken ill at Gaganov's lodging, where he had happened to go early in the morning. Alas, the poor woman was so anxious to be deceived again. The question which I found being discussed was whether the ball, that is, the whole second half of the fete, should or should not take place. Yulia Mikhailovna could not be induced to appear at the ball after the insults she had received that morning. In other words, her heart was set on being compelled to do so, and by him, by Pyotr Stepanovitch. She looked upon him as an oracle, and I believe if he had gone away, she would have taken to her bed at once. But he did not want to go away. He was desperately anxious that the ball should take place, and that Yulia Mikhailovna should be present at it. "Come, what is there to cry about? Are you set on having a scene? On venting your anger on somebody? Well, vent it on me, only make haste about it, for the time is passing, and you must make up your mind. We made a mess of it with the matinee. We'll pick up on the ball. Here, the prince thinks as I do. Yes, if it hadn't been for the prince, how would things have ended here?" The prince had been at first opposed to the ball, that is, opposed to Yulia Mikhailovna's appearing at it. The ball was bound to go on in any case. But after two or three such references to his opinion, he began little by little to grunt his acquiescence. I was surprised, too, at the extraordinary rudeness of Pyotr Stepanovitch's tone. Oh, I scout with indignation the contemptible slander which was spread later of some supposed liaison between Yulia Mikhailovna and Pyotr Stepanovitch. There was no such thing, nor could there be. He gained his ascendancy over her from the first only by encouraging her in her dreams of influence in society and in the ministry, by entering into her plans, by inventing them for her, and working upon her with the grossest flattery. He had got her completely into his toils, and had become as necessary to her as the air she breathed. Seeing me, she cried with flashing eyes, "Here, ask him. He kept by my side all the while, just like the prince did. Tell me, isn't it plain that it was all a preconcerted plot, a base, designing plot to damage Andrei Antonovitch and me as much as possible? Oh, they had arranged it beforehand. They had a plan. It's a party, a regular party." "You are exaggerating as usual. You've always some romantic notion in your head. But I am glad to see Mr. He pretended to have forgotten my name. "He'll give us his opinion." "My opinion," I hastened to put in, "is the same as Yulia Mikhailovna's. The plot is only too evident. I have brought you these ribbons, Yulia Mikhailovna. Whether the ball is to take place or not is not my business, for it's not in my power to decide, but my part as steward is over. Forgive my warmth, but I can't act against the dictates of common sense and my own convictions."
"You hear? You hear?" She clasped her hands.
"I hear, and I tell you this," he turned to me. "I think you must have eaten something which has made you all delirious. To my thinking, nothing has happened. Absolutely nothing but what has happened before and is always liable to happen in this town. A plot, indeed. It was an ugly failure, disgracefully stupid. But where's the plot? A plot against Yulia Mikhailovna, who has spoiled them and protected them and fondly forgiven them all their schoolboy pranks? Yulia Mikhailovna, what have I been hammering into you for the last month continually? What did I warn you? What did you want with all these people? What did you want with them? What induced you to mix yourself up with these fellows? What was the motive? What was the object of it? To unite society? But mercy on us, will they ever be united? When did you warn me? On the contrary, you approved of it. You even insisted on it. I confess I am so surprised. You brought all sorts of people to see me yourself. On the contrary, I opposed you. I did not approve of it. As for bringing them to see you, I certainly did, but only after they'd got in by the dozens and only of late to make up the literary quadrille. We couldn't get on without these rogues. Only I don't mind betting that a dozen or two more of the same sort were let in without tickets today. Not a doubt of it, I agreed. There, you see, you're agreeing already. Think what the tone has been lately here. I mean, in this wretched town. It's nothing but insolence, impudence. It's been a crying scandal all the time. And who's been encouraging it? Who's screened it by her authority? Who's upset them all? Who has made all the small fry huffy? All their family secrets are caricatured in your album. Didn't you pat them on the back, your poets and caricaturists? Didn't you let Liamshin kiss your hand? Didn't a divinity student abuse an actual state councillor in your presence and spoil his daughter's dress with his tarred boots? Now, can you wonder that the public is set against you? But that's all you're doing. Yours! Oh, my goodness! No, I warned you. We quarrelled, do you hear? We quarrelled. Why, you are lying to my face. Of course it's easy for you to say that. You need a victim to vent your wrath on. Well, vent it on me, as I've said already. I'd better appeal to you, He was still unable to recall my name. We'll reckon on our fingers. I maintain that, apart from Liputin, there was nothing preconcerted. Nothing. I will prove it. But first, let us analyze Liputin. He came forward with that fool Lebyadkin's verses. Do you maintain that that was a plot? But do you know it might simply have struck Liputin as a clever thing to do? Seriously, seriously. He simply came forward with the idea of making everyone laugh and entertaining them. His protectress Yulia Mikhailovna, first of all. That was all. Don't you believe it? Isn't that in keeping with all that has been going on here for the last month? Do you want me to tell you the whole truth? I declare that under other circumstances it might have gone off all right. It was a coarse joke, well, a bit strong, perhaps, but it was amusing, you know, wasn't it? What? You think what Liputin did was clever? Yulia Mikhailovna cried in intense indignation. Such stupidity! Such tactlessness! So contemptible! So mean! It was intentional! Oh, you were saying it on purpose. I believe after that you are in the plot with them yourself. Of course I was behind the scenes. I was in hiding. I set it all going. But if I were in the plot, understand that anyway, it wouldn't have ended with Liputin. So according to you, I had arranged with my papa, too, that he should cause such a scene on purpose. Well, whose fault is it that my papa was allowed to read? Who tried only yesterday to prevent you from allowing it? Only yesterday. Oh, hier il avait tant d'esprit. I was so reckoning on him. And then he has such manners. I thought with him and Karamazinov. Only think. Yes, only think. But in spite of tant d'esprit, papa has made things worse. And if I'd known beforehand that he'd make such a mess of it, I should certainly not have persuaded you yesterday to keep the goat out of the kitchen garden. Should I? Since I am taking part in this conspiracy against your fate that you are so positive about. And yet I did try to dissuade you yesterday. I tried to because I foresaw it. To foresee everything was, of course, impossible. He probably did not know himself a minute before what he would fire off. These nervous old men can't be reckoned on like other people. But you can still save the situation. To satisfy the public, send to him tomorrow by administrative order, and with all the ceremonies, two doctors to inquire into his health. Even today, in fact, and take him straight to the hospital and apply cold compresses. Everyone would laugh anyway, and see that there was nothing to take offence at. I'll tell people about it in the evening at the ball, as I am his son. Karamazinov is another story. He was a perfect ass, and dragged out his article for a whole hour. He certainly must have been in the plot with me. I'll make a mess of it too, he thought, to damage Yulia Mikhailovna. Oh, Karamazinov, quelle honte! I was burning, burning with shame for his audience. Well, I shouldn't have burnt, but have cooked him instead. The audience was right, you know. Who was to blame for Karamazinov again? Did I foist him upon you? Was I one of his worshippers? Well, hang him. But the third maniac, the political, that's a different matter. That was everyone's blunder, not only my plot.
Oh, don't speak of it. That was awful, awful. That was my fault, entirely my fault.
Of course it was. But I don't blame you for that. No one can control them, these candid souls. You can't always be safe from them, even in Petersburg. He was recommended to you, and in what terms, too? So you will admit that you are bound to appear at the ball tonight. It's an important business. It was you who put him on the platform. You must make it plain now to the public that you were not in league with him, that the fellow is in the hands of the police, and that you were, in some inexplicable way, deceived. You ought to declare with indignation that you were the victim of a madman, because he is a madman and nothing more. That's how you must put it about him. I can't endure these people who bite. I say worse things, perhaps, but not from the platform, you know. And they are talking about a senator, too. What senator? Who's talking? I don't understand it myself, you know. Do you know anything about a senator, Yulia Mikhailovna? A senator? You say they are convinced that a senator has been appointed to be governor here, and that you are being superseded from Petersburg. I've heard it from lots of people.
I've heard it, too, I put in.
Who said so?
Asked Yulia Mikhailovna, flushing all over. You mean who said so first? How can I tell? But there it is. People say so. Masses of people are saying so. They were saying so yesterday particularly. They are all very serious about it, though I can't make it out. Of course, the more intelligent and competent don't talk, but even some of those listen.
How mean! And how stupid!
Well, that's just why you must make your appearance, to show these fools.
I confess I feel myself that it's my duty, but what if there's another disgrace in store for us? What if people don't come? No one will come, you know? No one.
How hot you are. They not come? What about the new clothes? What about the girls' dresses? I give you up as a woman after that. Is that your knowledge of human nature?
The marshal's wife won't come. She won't.
But after all, what has happened? Why won't they come? He cried at last with angry impatience.
Ignominy! Disgrace! That's what's happened. I don't know what to call it, but after it I can't face people.
Why? How are you to blame for it after all? Why do you take the blame of it on yourself? Isn't it rather the fault of the audience, of your respectable residents, your patres familias? They ought to have controlled the roughs and the rowdies. For it was all the work of the roughs and the rowdies, nothing serious. You can never manage things with the police alone in any society, anywhere. Among us, everyone asks for a special policeman to protect him wherever he goes. People don't understand that society must protect itself. And what do our patres familias, the officials, the wives and daughters, do in such cases? They sit quiet and sulk. In fact, there's not enough social initiative to keep the disorderly in check.
Oh, that's the simple truth. They sit quiet, sulk, and gaze about them.
And if it's the truth, you ought to say so aloud, proudly, sternly, just to show that you are not defeated, to those respectable residents and mothers of families. Oh, you can do it. You have the gift when your head is clear. You will gather them round you and say it aloud, and then a paragraph in The Voice and the Financial News. Wait a bit. I'll undertake it myself. I'll arrange it all for you. Of course, there must be more superintendents. You must look after the buffet. You must ask the prince. You must ask Mr... You must not desert us, monsieur, just when we have to begin all over again. And finally, you must appear arm in arm with Andrei Antonovitch. How is Andrei Antonovitch?
Oh, how unjustly, how untruly, how cruelly you have always judged that angelic man,
Yulia Mikhailovna cried in a sudden outburst, almost with tears, putting her handkerchief to her eyes. Pyotr Stepanovitch was positively taken aback for the moment. Good heavens, what have I said? I've always...
You never have! Never! You have never done him justice!
There's no understanding a woman, grumbled Pyotr Stepanovitch with a wry smile.
He is the most sincere, the most delicate, the most angelic of men, the most kind-hearted of men.
Well, really, as for kind-heartedness, I've always done him justice.
Never!
But let us drop it. I am too awkward in my defence of him. This morning that little Jesuit, the marshal's wife, also dropped some sarcastic hints about what happened yesterday. Oh, she has no thoughts to spare for yesterday now. She is full of today. And why are you so upset at her not coming to the ball tonight? Of course she won't come after getting mixed up in such a scandal. Perhaps it's not her fault, but still her reputation. Her hands are soiled.
What do you mean? I don't understand. Why are her hands soiled?
Yulia Mikhailovna looked at him in perplexity. I don't vouch for the truth of it, but the town is ringing with the story that it was she brought them together.
What do you mean? Brought whom together?
What?
Do you mean to say you don't know?
He exclaimed with well-simulated wonder.
Why, Stavrogin and Lizaveta Nikolaevna.
What? How? We all cried out at once.
Is it possible you don't know?
Phew! Why, it is quite a tragic romance. Lizaveta Nikolaevna was pleased to get out of that lady's carriage and get straight into Stavrogin's carriage, and slipped off with the latter to Skvoreshniki in full daylight, only an hour ago, hardly an hour. We were flabbergasted. Of course, we fell to questioning him, but to our wonder, although he happened to be a witness of the scene himself, he could give us no detailed account of it. The thing seemed to have happened like this. When the marshal's wife was driving Liza and Mavriky Nikolaevich from the matinee to the house of Praskovya Ivanovna, whose legs were still bad, they saw a carriage waiting a short distance, about 25 paces, to one side of the front door. When Liza jumped out, she ran straight to this carriage. The door was flung open and shut again. Liza called to Mavriky Nikolaevich, "Spare me," and the carriage drove off at full speed to Skvoreshniki. To our hurried questions, whether it was by arrangement, who was in the carriage, Pyotr Stepanovich answered that he knew nothing about it. No doubt it had been arranged, but that he did not see Stavrogin himself. Possibly the old butler, Alexei Yegorych, might have been in the carriage. To the question, how did he come to be there, and how did he know for a fact that she had been driving to Skvoreshniki, he answered that he happened to be passing, and, at seeing Liza, he had run up to the carriage, and yet he could not make out who was in it, an inquisitive man like him, and that Mavriky Nikolaevich, far from setting off in pursuit, had not even tried to stop Liza, and had even laid a restraining hand on the marshal's wife, who was shouting at the top of her voice, "She's going to Stavrogin! To Stavrogin!" At this point I lost patience, and cried furiously to Pyotr Stepanovich, "It's all you're doing, you rascal. That was what you were doing this morning. You helped Stavrogin. You came in the carriage. You helped her into it. It was you. You. Yulia Mikhailovna, he is your enemy. He will be your ruin, too. Beware of him." And I ran headlong out of the house. I wonder myself, and cannot make out to this day, how I came to say that to him. But I guessed quite right. It had all happened almost exactly as I said, as appeared later. What struck me most was the obviously artificial way in which he broke the news. He had not told it at once on entering the house as an extraordinary piece of news, but pretended that we knew without his telling us, which was impossible in so short a time. And if we had known it, we could not possibly have refrained from mentioning it till he introduced the subject. Besides, he could not have heard yet that the town was ringing with gossip about the marshal's wife in so short a time. Besides, he had once or twice given a vulgar, frivolous smile as he told the story, probably considering that we were fools and completely taken in. But I had no thought to spare for him. The central fact, I believed, and ran from Yulia Mikhailovna's beside myself. The catastrophe cut me to the heart. I was wounded almost to tears. Perhaps I did shed some, indeed. I was at a complete loss what to do. I rushed to Stepan Trofimovich's, but the vexatious man still refused to open the door. Nastasya informed me in a reverent whisper that he had gone to bed, but I did not believe it. At Liza's house I succeeded in questioning the servants. They confirmed the story of the elopement, but knew nothing themselves. There was great commotion in the house. Their mistress had been attacked by fainting fits, and Mavriky Nikolaevich was with her. I did not feel it possible to ask for Mavriky Nikolaevich. To my inquiries about Pyotr Stepanovich, they told me that he had been in and out continually of late, sometimes twice in the day. The servants were sad, and showed particular respectfulness in speaking of Liza. They were fond of her. That she was ruined, utterly ruined, I did not doubt, but the psychological aspect of the matter I was utterly unable to understand, especially after her scene with Stavrogin the previous day. To run about the town and inquire at the houses of acquaintances who would, of course, by now have heard the news and be rejoicing at it seemed to me revolting, besides being humiliating for Lisa. But strange to say, I ran to see Darya Pavlovna, though I was not admitted. No one had been admitted into the house since the previous morning. I don't know what I could have said to her, and what made me run to her. From her I went to her brother's. Shatov listened sullenly and in silence. I may observe that I found him more gloomy than I had ever seen him before. He was awfully preoccupied, and seemed only to listen to me with an effort. He said scarcely anything, and began walking up and down his cell from corner to corner, treading more noisily than usual. As I was going down the stairs, he shouted after me to go to Liputin's.
"There you'll hear everything."
Yet I did not go to Liputin's, but after I'd gone a good way towards home, I turned back to Shatov's again, and, half opening the door without going in, suggested to him laconically and with no kind of explanation, "Won't you go to Marya Timofyevna today?" At this, Shatov swore at me, and I went away. I note here that I may not forget it, that he did purposely go that evening to the other end of the town to see Marya Timofyevna, whom he had not seen for some time. He found her in excellent health and spirits, and Lebyadkin dead drunk, asleep on the sofa in the first room. This was at 9 o'clock. He told me so himself next day when we met for a moment in the street. Before 10 o'clock, I made up my mind to go to the ball, but not in the capacity of a steward. Besides, my rosette had been left at Yulia Mikhailovna's. I was tempted by irresistible curiosity to listen, without asking any questions, to what people were saying in the town about all that had happened. I wanted, too, to have a look at Yulia Mikhailovna, if only at a distance. I reproached myself greatly that I had left her so abruptly that afternoon.